What is good with the people? I am Damo, the political plug. This is the Chop Up Show. I'm here with my dog, Toya G. What's good with you, Toya?
What's going on, plug? What's going on, people? What's good? Thursday night, we at it again, man. It's March on the move like it got somewhere to be. Which is kind of crazy.
It's March.
Listen, no pun. But besides that, we are here. You know what I'm saying? Feeling good.
Yeah, so this is a good Thursday for us to be here, because the dialogue is rich. It's rich. A lot of interesting things happening in the world. Let me tell y'all this. Be careful when y'all flying. I just want to start this show out with a public service announcement. Be careful when y'all flying. Be careful where y'all going, what planes you on. If it's possible, avoid Boeing. All right? Not only has Boeing using subpar parts, not only are they, you know, half-assing regulation, ain't not really doing nothing right, they also killing the whistleblowers, allegedly. Yeah. Allegedly, right? That's what's going on. A whistleblower, a quality inspector for Boeing that was kind of exposing a lot of the nonsense they own, was recently found dead, okay? Like a week or something before he's supposed to testify about Boeing's failures.
He's been a whistleblower for a while now, and the fact that his family has already said, like, no reason to kill himself, no, nothing points to those behaviors being on their radar or possible. So it's a lot of confusion
about that.
And we know this is a comment. This is in the playbook.
Yeah.
It's part of the playbook.
A huge part of the playbook. And we also recognize that just like I think this past week alone, it's been like three or four planes that's either then had to land or dealt with some type of technical issues because of some shoddy work being done by Boeing. So y'all be careful as y'all start traveling for spring break and all them other things. Y'all be careful what planes y'all hopping on, because they ain't doing shit right. They nigger rigging shit over there. They ain't doing it right.
Yeah. I mean, this is a result, though, of deregulation, and it's a lot of fingers that can't be pointed. It's not just Boeing. It is the organization, or rather the institutions or the parts of the institutions that allow for them to go and get past a lot of the regulations that they used to have in place, but now they haven't or been able to circumvent, and now these are the situations and the outcomes we get. So it's crazy.
Right. But that was just a ramble. That was my public service announcement for all y'all people I care about that's watching, just so y'all being safe on these planes. But y'all seen the thumbnail. So, Toya, we should just go ahead and get into it, right?
Go ahead. Jump in.
And that is the TikTok ban. The TikTok ban that's on the way. If anybody been paying attention,
You said very surely. You said it's on the way. So, I mean, but carry on. Now, just the way you said it, it's a little jarring, but we'll get there.
Well, because it has some legs. Now, initially, you feel me? A lot of people felt like, nah, like, we don't see how that happened, right? But oddly enough, what's happened recently with the legislation that came out of the House, a bipartisan legislation at that, is the House passed a bill that either forces TikTok to sell its stake in the Chinese owned company that runs TikTok,
ByteDance, I believe.
Yes, it is. ByteDance. Or they just getting rid of it. You feel me? Now a lot of people have a lot of like real social issues, like problems that they have with TikTok. You got a lot of people in the YouTube communities, like pro black communities, conservative conspiracy type communities. It's a lot of conversation about how TikTok is predatory. The app itself is predatory. The whole app was created to give people access, like grown people access to kids. You know what I'm saying? So it's like there's a lot of beefs that exist with TikTok amongst people. What have you heard? Do you know of anybody being like TikTok is bad because of
I mean, before I answer, shout out to Tiffany, shout out to Miss Man. What's good? Good evening. Happy Thursday. Happy to have y'all. Anybody else in here, go ahead and say what's up. Speak. You know what I'm saying? Say what's up to the family. We definitely happy to have y'all in here. But in terms of negative press for TikTok, not really. I mean, I think the biggest criticism that I've seen, or the most common one here lately, is that it has been commodified by a marketplace mentality, right? The TikTok shop has like overwhelmed posts. And so seeing a lot of content is, of course, going to be there because you're able to scroll to your heart's content, but it's going to be muddled with a lot of people trying to sell you something or get you to buy something or, and get commissions and things like that. And so people have been unhappy with that. But, you know, I think it has been what it's always been, which is a place that thrives with trends, with salacious material, Charles and Netta and these people and that people and the mugs and the cup, who had the Stanley cups, they really started to get there. Every trend
NPCs,
really took off.
NPCs was wild. That was a wild
right eras. So many eras have been on TikTok, but the only negative things that I really heard straight out about it that people are not happy about with the app is just the way that consumerism has kind of become the backdrop and the foundation of it now.
Yeah, that's how it goes. So you ain't really heard a lot of the dialogue about why it's just a bad thing. You know what I'm saying? Like the access to kids and all of that type of stuff. You ain't heard none of that?
I mean, no. Like a lot of people have the same criticisms of TikTok that they have, I think, of Instagram and any other social media in general, especially with the studies that have been done most recently on the effects on teens and stuff like that, that it's probably not the most positive atmosphere because you can only, you know, talk about unaliving or use code words in certain languages.
Can't even say that no more.
Which is wild, but you can only find use so many euphemisms before the kids still know what's going on. They still see what's tea. They're still able to make connections. And so, you know, no, like a lot of people have been like the biggest criticism of this bill, which is these privacy concerns are not concerns that are real to me. Y'all have all my information. Y'all watching me all day, every day. Y'all don't plan on changing it. The Patriot Act may ensure that y'all could do it. If it's not this app, it's going to be some other American based app that's eating me up. And so I don't really care that China got my information because China been whooping y'all ass in every other sector. They probably already got it in another way too. So a lot of people have been like,
You can't say stuff like that because then that's why.
I'm sorry.
That gets it that because that's why they think they got to do shit like this because they like it's this idea that we're losing to China. You feel me? Because like if you look into what the New York Times article point out that the House on Wednesday passed a bill with broad bipartisan support that will force TikTok's Chinese owner to either sell the hugely popular video app or have it banned in the United States. The move escalates a showdown between Beijing and Washington over the control of a wide range of technologies that could affect national security, free speech, and the social media industry. Now, it's extremely important to point out, in an era where partisanship in politics is at an all-time high, this is not something that partisanship played no role in this. It was a bipartisan vote, very lopsided, 352-65. Okay, I was expecting it to be like kind of, you know, right down the middle with Republicans getting all the Republicans, which is enough for them to win it. But nah, like even Nancy Pelosi got up there and gave a speech.
Talking about some tic tac toe.
And we gonna get
stupid shit. What?
But ultimately, the concern is this: is China. Donnell in the building. What's good with you, family? It's China.
Yeah, KJ too. KJ said, if I'm not mistaken, this is a push for that was met with 81% approval. So I think those numbers shake out in terms of what you just said. But it's wild. Plug, am I tripping? A lot of people keep pointing out, like they keep calling this man Chinese and he's Singaporean.
Yes.
Like, is that not an important thing to think about or consider in the framing of this conversation? Like in terms of even the kind of Chinese witch hunt that the federal government is on right now?
So the CEO is Singaporean. But the company that owns TikTok is Chinese.
It's Chinese. Okay. Right?
And so that's why they was putting that Chinese like bag on him because it was just like, have you ever worked for the Chinese? Have you ever been in the Chinese military? He's like, nigga, I was in the Singaporean military. What the fuck is you talking about? Yeah. Like, we not the same.
So they what I call grouped and scooped them. They went ahead and made them affiliated and associated and
pretty much.
Or probably being a little xenophobic and Eurocentric and how they're talking about it too, but that's their logic. I get it.
Yeah, pretty much. And so the main reason that this is happening is China. Yeah. They're like, or this is what they're saying. Like the argument that they're making is that Having like Chinese companies having access to the information of U.S. citizens is dangerous. They could use it to do whatever the Chinese, you know what I'm saying, the Chinese do. But it's like the whole purpose of this, forget all the millions of people who use it for the different reasons they use it for. We got to strike at China. You feel me? So given their justification, we're going to talk about whether or not that's to be believed, but giving their justification, are those legitimate reasons to ban TikTok? Should it be banned for other reasons, or should it just be left the fuck alone?
I really, really, really think TikTok should just be left alone. And it is largely, if not for any other reason, because of the same reason everybody's been saying, there are bigger fish to fry. There are bigger concerns we have. There are bigger things that should be running across the president's desk. If it is true that these are the last couple moments he has to make some moves and decisions, this should be the last place his attention is right now, right? And so I think, and what I, because I was just driving around listening to NPR and how, and they had a whole kind of conversation about how the housing crisis is slowly sneaking in and snipping in at this like last minute important line item that needs to be addressed by the person running for president.
Emmanuel in the building.
For President Biden. What's up, Emmanuel? And so like, I also will say in terms of whether or not this is of importance or whether this should happen, a lot of people have been making the argument that President Biden is dependent on the youth vote. You're dependent on a particular demographic to fall in line, to wait and bide and wait their turn and wait for you to get done doing whatever the hell you're doing with the second term before they can really start seeing the change they want to be and change they want to see. And so the ones you banking on showing up for you, they're not gonna take too kindly what you're playing with their TikTok. And I just, it's bad policy maneuvering.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of your specific goals and objectives come November. So I don't think it's a smart move, even with the concerns that are associated with the bill or with the app.
Yeah. I feel like I agree with you. Definitely need to be left the hell alone, just the way, same way y'all ended up leaving Facebook alone. Y'all end up leaving Twitter alone. Y'all end up leaving Instagram alone. After y'all had them whatever sham investigations, TikTok or Facebook still selling niggas' data. Instagram right. still selling niggas' data. It Twitter, same shit. Like those. Yeah, go ahead.
An alien, a South African, and y'all, you accepting them because Mark Zuckerberg is definitely extraterrestrial. And then. What's the other man? Elon Musk is not from up here.
Yeah.
But you took favor on them. But because they're Chinese or Chinese affiliated, you got a problem. It's that Orientalism.
Yeah.
Which is the root. It's the root.
Yeah, and that's why I think it need to be left alone. And these reasons are not legitimate at all, because these days we don't buy into the same propaganda. Like, we now live in an age where a lot of, as much as the United States has already been a dissenting state, we've already been a dissenting people, with the access to information that us later generations have had, yo, we know propaganda when we see it. Y'all can't get us on McCarthyism. Y'all can't get us on the same rallies and crusades that y'all was doing in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. Man, everybody already up on game. We already got We already got the clips of y'all on your bullshit. We already know. Yeah. We already know what y'all have admitted to standing for and standing by. We have access to so much accountability information to recognize when we are being played. And a TikTok ban is, like this TikTok ban specifically, is an example of niggas being played. But like you said, you playing with the wrong ones. You playing with the people.
These new kids is
I was saying this, I was talking about this with Lee the other day. It ain't even the kids. My mama calls me routinely, telling me about how, like, it was certain shit we was talking about, and she was like, see, this is what we need to be teaching our kids. I was like, you didn't teach us this shit. And she was like, because she was saying she didn't know it. She didn't have it. And TikTok is informing people in ways that niggas have not been informed before. Like, at first, I was like, I ain't learning nothing from no social media app. But then, shit, the game.
Yeah, bro, you and Lee can attest to it the most. I was so resistant to TikTok. I was so like, yeah, whatever. Anyway, like y'all playing and it's Lil World Jolin pushing these, you know, making these videos, doing these dances. We always, he with us, but he ain't really there. Like, he like 80% there because he got to go make a video. He got to walk off and do something off to the side. Man, walking around with a charger in his hand. Why your phone always there? Because you're always on damn TikTok. You know what I'm saying? Then you start getting the bug, making videos. And now I see, you know, the light, the way, the component, the importance, yeah. The influence that it's had on the society, what he having. It's a lot of people who just like, you can't take that away from me. I don't accept that as good enough in terms of what it is.
At all. And I mean, also, if y'all on TikTok and y'all don't follow me at the political plug on TikTok, at the political plug on TikTok, we on our way to 40K. So help your boy get there. But again, y'all fucking with the wrong ones. If y'all trying to get rid of this app, as much as Facebook was like culturally for our generation, this app took it to a whole nother level. And now it's like cultural to the people.
Can I ask a question? And it's important you say that. I want to be specific about the image. I don't think we answer this. So I want you to answer it directly. I'll frame it in the context of Twitter, because we know Twitter is now X officially. And it is that because of the changing of hands. It went from the individuals who owned it before to Elon Musk. And a lot of people were like, this is a blow. You know, for a lot of reasons. You have these official accounts that were run by official individuals, and now you don't have the ability to verify identities. You have parody pages. You have a lot of people pretending to be other people. You have a lot of people who are not respecting the fact that you have to pay for content on there. You have the censorship guidelines being changed and dismissed. And so what used to be a violation is no longer a violation. You have a lot of vitriol, a lot of hate speech, a lot of crazy stuff going on that app. And so people are upset. And so in a lot of ways, you know, people are like, Twitter don't exist to me no more. Twitter's dead to me. Twitter's gone. We lost it, right? Even though it's still there, I still use it. For all intents and purposes, we lost it.
And now we got Threads and that shit.
Exactly. And so, and whatever Instagram's trying to do, right? And then shout out to Spill. I still got the Spill app. I still look over there, but it don't move like these other timelines move. And so,
I forgot about that.
Exactly. A lot of people did. I'm not. But that being said, my question to you, Plug, is do you think society will suffer from the loss of TikTok? Like, if we do lose TikTok, do you feel like we will look at it as a collective and say we suffered a great loss? Or will it just be kind of something that goes into the abyss or that didn't really have a lot of real estate of importance to begin with? How do you read that?
Nah, I mean, I think TikTok, if we did lose TikTok, it'll just come back in some other form of fashion. I think in a lot of ways, other social media platforms have introduced TikTok like elements. So like the Reels on Instagram and Facebook, the Shorts on YouTube, which really people just across their different platforms, they are posted to TikTok, they are posted to the Reel, they are posted to a Short. So
that's a good point. I mean, in a world of cross posting, it's like
So like that same vibe will still exist. That same vibe will still exist. People are still make TikTok like content. You know what I'm saying? The same educational material, all that. So yeah, I think
people will argue you're not gonna get that same bag. Like me and Lee talking, you know, us we talk to Lee all the time about the way that he has been able to take his craft, turn it into a business model, utilize different platforms to, you know, engage different audiences to get different outcomes. And he's been able to be like, you know, TikTok is making me upset in this way, but it do pay more money than Instagram in this way. And then Facebook ain't really, you know what I'm saying? So in terms of, you know, content creators who make a lot of their income off of that app, you know, I do feel like it would be a ding for them who make their lion's share of their money off of TikTok, because like you either got to go into way longer form content and take the YouTube pivot, or you got to figure out how to squeeze the money out of Instagram and Facebook, which is a different science that you may not have mastered because you might have put, you know, a little bit more energy into what TikTok was doing. And so I don't know. I'm not that person, but I'm on the outside looking in at how much of a cornerstone that component of income has become for people and how that could affect some things. So I don't know.
I do think that like even when it comes to the money aspect, I think that what will happen is when people want when these platforms want more people on their platform, they change up, they provide those incentives. So a loss of TikTok would mean that YouTube is willing to pay more money. Facebook is with Instagram willing to pay more money. So I think the creator market that still exists, And but if you only doing what you do on TikTok and you kind of doing like growing, yeah, then you kind of showing you selling yourself short anyway. You know what I'm saying? Because you know what I mean, if that's how you're doing it, you need to diversify, switch it up. KJ,
you got to be able to keep up with where the money at.
Exactly. KJ said we would just move to whatever platform we can. Most of us here, I assume, old enough to remember the end of MySpace and Black Planet, for instance. Yes, sir.
RIP. Yeah. I just hold on. Don't speed past that. Shout out to Pimp Mama TL7. That was me. On both spaces. Pimp Mama T. Capital T07. Go ahead.
I think I was like that Baker Boy 1114. That Baker Boy 1114.
If I can ask real quick before we just jump to the next thing, what is the significance of 1114?
My birthday.
Yeah. Of course, obviously. Yeah. And then you know why I chose 07?
Class.
Hey.
Of course.
Somebody, the class up. Salute to all my people out there, all my tigers specifically. How you doing? Where you at? How you been?
But the next question that I got though, is actually some conspiracy theorying going on in the context of this band. It's not. Tiffany says she was deeply cherished. Of course you were.
She's on deeply cherished. She deeply cherished now. She on everything. It's deeply cherished. She's been deeply cherished for 2 decades, and I love it. You are. And I'm so happy that you understand it. Shout out to Miss Ma'am. Absolutely, a moment of silence, man. Because it, to this day, it pains me. We had some good things going there. I had a couple little booze. You know what I'm saying? That top A to get you.
It'll get you a great time.
But we digress.
So let's get into the conspiracy theorying that's been going on about this band. Because of course, like, it's not just happening for no reason, right? Like, it's,
of course,
the type of world that we in. What you see ain't always what you see. You feel me?
Mm-hmm.
And the conversation has started to shift to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict being an issue, a big issue on TikTok. And what's being recognized, what polling is showing, what they seeing in data is that most of the voices and that you see being proliferated across TikTok are pro-Palestinian, right? It's pro-watermelon. You know what I'm saying? It's anti-genocide.
Yeah, right? I seen maybe like 15 hashtags. Like it was like this like infograph that showed like the, like it was all Palestinian hashtags. Like Free Palestine was like 98%. And then it was like 15 other hashtags that was taking up the other percent of all of that. But it was just like so many different diverse ways people was talking about Palestine for sure.
And so you have people like Josh Hawley, like Marco Rubio, Mark Gallagher. These are all Republicans in the House and in the Senate that are just straight up like, this whole thing is anti-Israel. This whole thing is anti-Semitic, and TikTok is being used to indoctrinate the youth into being anti-Semitic. Now, again, what the youth have let it be known off break is that it's literally about genocide. Genocide is genocide, regardless of, you know what I'm saying, like how y'all want to politicize it. And calling out genocide is not anti-Semitic. And everybody that says that is willing to stand on it. You feel me? So y'all can play the word games and try to manipulate it, but the gaslighting that has been done with this conflict has been called out heavily on TikTok. And now, again, they're referring to that as indoctrination. Even further leads us to think that this has to do with the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is the head of the ADL actually made several comments. It was recorded making several comments specifically about the impact of TikTok on the Israeli-Palestinian conversation.
What does the ADL stand for?
The Anti-Defamation League.
The Anti-Defamation League, for sure. So definitely big defenders against anti-Semitism. And real quick before you play the clip, J Universe said, just got done trying to put my supervisor onto the show or onto the podcast so I could listen to it while we work. Thank you, J Universe. That's what it's all about. Those are the connections We need this. That's Chop Nation behavior right there. Yes. And I personally appreciate it. Thank you.
Love it.
Shout out to your boss. Shout out to the super.
Shout out to the fan. They fam too. They fam too.
But, right,
but let's hear what the head of the Anti-Defamation League had to say about what he calls a TikTok problem. Oddly enough, let's get it. So we heard it ourselves. They didn't say, he said we need to get over this. And this is what I think is extremely interesting. When it comes to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, they're saying we need to get over this Democrat versus Republican thing because that ain't even Israel's biggest problem.
Mm-hmm.
Which is telling. So, because you know where I'm about to take this, don't you, Toya?
If the
Democrat versus Republican thing ain't Israel's problem, our partisan approach to who we vote for and why we vote ain't got nothing to do with it. They looking at us as the enemy. They looking at the younger generation. Like he said, it ain't the Democrats versus Republicans. It's Gen Z.
It's generational. TikTok.
It's generational. That means our problem is these young people. You feel me? And so
absolutely.
And so that's why I think when we ended up, and I'll just say this, is I ain't gonna make the whole conversation about this, but this is why we need to be politically involved, because they're trying to discount us
specifically.
They're trying to let it be known that our perspective is not what they want, is not their vision for the country. Mm-hmm. How is it a generational problem if the next generation is supposed to take over?
You feel me? Yeah. I mean, I think you know what is really the backdrop of a lot of the approach, the standard approach, the traditional approach that they don't want Gen Z and other generations to take, is the anti-historical one. And we know that that's in the playbook of the United States federal government, right? They want us to believe that everything started on October 7th. And what Gen Z has done, it's been like, wait a minute. We are not lazy. We gonna sit and really unpack in a way that's accessible to everybody what the hell has happened over the course since the 1940s in that region and figure out what's what and really untangle, you know, who was really responsible for starting it. You know what I'm saying? Like, we understand that violence beget violence and we're not justifying things, but let's just really get to the bottom of it. And so for months, they didn't do nothing but tell the history. They didn't do nothing but expose the truth. They didn't do nothing but find video and audio and break down what really happened. And the biggest fear that this government has is people who are able to give a play-by-play with any level of accuracy on the things they hope we never learn the truth about. And so that's what's really wild, is that his biggest concern and his biggest fear is the investments. Because, I mean, honestly, let's look back at our generation. I'm going to tell you an airheaded thought that I used to have instead of being this invested in thinking and looking into the geopolitical issues of our time. I was like, Fallujah is a funny name for a place. And that was about as deep as I got.
Thought about that, yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, all right, that's crazy. You know what I'm saying? Like, the level of American exceptionalism, the level of, you know what I'm saying, comfort that I have and the privilege that I have in being here, I was really, we as a generation really truly exercised those things. So when, you know, we were kind of being hit to the implications of 9/11, what's happening, and so, like, yeah, we started to get a little, but I was on the way to college. Yeah. When I figured out, you know, weapons of mass destruction was a lie, and like, you know, and really put piecing together the larger
imperialist
framework that is, you know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't, they talking that talk at 14 and a half, bro. This is why. This is my whole point, is that they moving different, but what they moving different on is facts, information, and it's facts over feelings.
Exactly.
And they don't like that.
Exactly. And what's required for American imperialism to move unmolested? Ahistoricity. It can't be correct. It's ahistorical. It's required that we ignore any aggression by the IDF and the Israeli government in order to then justify the talking points that they run with now, right? You have to have a perspective that they are that they just ain't did nothing wrong. When again, we know that the situation is more complicated than that. Remember when we was talking last year about Ukraine and the money that we send to Ukraine? What was my response? You was like, niggas care about the money going to Ukraine. I was like, niggas don't even care about all the money we sent to Israel. And that was back in, that had to be in the summertime. You feel me? So it's now apps like TikTok is where not only can niggas learn, get resources, but then come back and hit them with this. And this is another perspective on how they doing this shit bad.
Can we have a sidebar about Ukraine? I promise you, I only need 30 seconds. They've just sent another $300 million to Ukraine in support and resources. And this is to the point now where y'all, they are literally dipping into our defenses. Like there's like, I think $1 billion worth of a deficit of military resources that is missing from our overall little trove of things because of the negotiating, the bartering, and not even the bartering, because we're not getting anything back, but the things we've extended to Ukraine. So again, I'm gonna make my point that people care about that shit. People care about that shit. And this is in a world where I told you it's a housing crisis going on, mortgages going up, rental costs still going sky high. People care about that shit. That's my commercial on Ukraine. Now back to this conversation. Right, thank you for
I'm gonna let you have that one.
We'll talk about it later.
But the question that I have then is given, you know, this context, this leaked audio, understanding how important the Jewish lobby AIPAC is to government, how important the ADL is, which, if we're being honest, the ADL is the Anti-Defamation League. They do challenge things like racism, but they are also heavily Jewish funded and heavily Jewish controlled. Which is not saying anything about Jewish people, algorithm, or anybody watching. Just like we understand who's influencing the organization, right? But with this understanding, do you buy into the theory that the ban is because of the overwhelming support for Palestine, not China? Like, if you had to put your weight into one more, do you think China matters more, or do you think the Palestinian support on the app matters more?
That is a great question. 51-49 split. I think that China is a priority because that's been the teeth of their criticism, their engagement, all of these hearings, all of whatever before. But I think this Palestine situation has pushed them over the brink. And they like, now the propaganda is just too much. It's artillery with the reasons and the justifications for why they want to get it up out of here. They'll never admit that. They'll never say that out loud, but they are definitely using that as another explanation or reason why they want the mass exodus quicker and immediate. By the way, this is something interesting about the VPNs, real quick, for people who want to try to get around
virtual privacy network, for those who don't know what that is.
Absolutely, right? So to trick the IP so that they don't really know, like you're going to show up like you in Bangkok or somewhere, like Thailand or somewhere, but you're going to be on TikTok. They find you 20 years in prison, minimum $250,000 fine, like up to like $1 million or something wild. That's like that. So crazy. Don't try to get on it. You just gotta turn it loose and let it go.
So look, this is where I disagree with you. I think it's all the pro-Palestinian shit. And here's why.
Interesting.
Like 100%. Because if it was a more partisan vote, I'm like, okay, Republicans need a crusade right now. They're losing support, they're losing members. Right, you got two more conservatives from, especially from the House, that's leaving the House, and they need something to distract people away from Donald Trump and everything that's going on with the RNC, how they got a purge happening in the RNC. It's a lot of nothing is going well for Republicans right now. So of course they need a crusade against China in order to get some type of footing, because they looking dumb as hell with this Biden impeachment, right? Everything that they got that they connected to is literally in the shitter. So a anti-Chinese crusade makes sense. The bipartisan.
Help me.
The bipartisan.
Because that's why I'm like, I get that. Sure, but help me with
the
that
fact that the fact that so many Democrats are also putting their, because again, even when, as much as Donald Trump tried to talk about China, you don't, there are no Chinese talking points coming out of any liberal camps right now. Like, or before this started happening. Like, yeah, well, yeah, do we, are there certain national security concerns? Have there been, like, a technological Cold War going on for years now? Yes. But in terms of, like, what's important for Democrats, at not one point, that, like, Republicans have been pushing the end, for TikTok for a lot of reasons for a while now. Democrats at no point have attached themselves to those talking points until now. And it's no surprise that many large Jewish organizations and lobbyists are standing behind this. You feel me? So the what makes it so bipartisan isn't the China part. It's what the ADL is saying. It's what it's what you have the AIPAC saying, right? It's and because they're able to disguise it behind anti-Semitism. So instead of saying that like real Palestinian history is being taught, they're saying anti-Semitism is being taught. Instead of the questions being against imperialism, they're saying they're indoctrinating people to be anti-Israel, right? Which is a part of again other bipartisan efforts across the country that have talked about banning like we talked about when they were talking about banning pro-Palestinian protests on schools. People being fired for putting pro-Palestinian posts on social media. So the whole China shit is a lie, like straight up. Like with all the issues and connections and money that's being made with China, anytime they trying to tell y'all that China is an enemy and a bad guy, then explain why niggas had no problem with Ivanka Trump making millions with Chinese and copyrights. And this is the daughter of the president.
My question, though, is, but their issue with TikTok and all these hearings predates the conflict between Israel and Palestine. So why then do the issues with China and the longstanding beef with China just, like, not count as implicating forces to this issue, I guess is my question.
Well, because, so the long-term, like, so the strategic positioning and the strategic push and pull that we see with the United States and China, like that's just been the status quo. That's just what that is. But what we recognize is that when politicians need like rallying cries, they've had a few to rely on. Russia and China are the main two. Democrats, other than like the same, you know, national protection, like the generic national protection conversation, they haven't been focused on that crusade, that rallying cry. Like
I feel like Joe Biden and Xi Jinping have only met like once during Joe Biden's whole presidency or something like that. I could be wrong, but I feel like they've only ever been like met one time.
And when they had the hearing with the CEO, the Singaporean, they weren't grilling him. Like the Democrats weren't, they didn't have an adversarial approach to what was going on TikTok until post Palestine, post October.
I mean, but I guess that still just takes me, and I'm, this is not, you know, combative to what you're saying. Still doesn't strategically make sense that they do that in the face of alienating so many voters. Cause we talking about Gen Z voters who would be pissed if TikTok goes away, but we also talk about the implications of free speech that a lot of people are concerned of any age range, right? And are staunch defenders of in any form that it comes, because they feel like there's a precedent that then becomes set for them to start. This is a lot of, like I think you said, this is not just did you say this or somebody else said it? It's not the TikTok bill, it is a censorship bill, right? It is a question of, yeah. Right on. It's not just the TikTok bill. We want to frame it as that, but this is a question about internet censorship and censored, like First Amendment censorship, and the ways that that will then kind of set a precedent and set the tone for how that looks like. It implicates not only other digital spaces, which are already transforming because of AI and this and that and whatever, but also like literal physical spaces. You know what I'm saying? So that's where it gets, where to me, it's just like, I feel like you, it's obviously it's gonna piss a lot of people off. And then that brings us back to where we started, not to, you know what I'm saying, like move the conversation anyway. You're not moving it, but we started at there are so many other things that you could care about besides attempting to strip people of their First Amendment rights on the low and not think we and think you low, but we see you. And then also piss off a huge voter base that you have in terms of young people as well. So, so I don't know. That's what this me thinking about.
Yeah, so I'm gonna say this and then I'm just gonna ask the last question and we can get to the second shot. Joe Biden and them, when it comes to this Israeli question, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, Joe Biden and them has already cut their losses. That's why you don't. That's why his rhetoric has remained the same. That's why, as far as they gonna go, is call for a ceasefire. But they're still gonna send money to Israel. You know what I'm saying? Like the whole, like a part of the whole border package that Republicans rejected was the amount of money that was going to Ukraine. You know, of course, Republicans don't have any problem with money going to Israel. And so the way Democrats, in terms of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, have already said, like, if we have to stick with the American imperialist agenda, we're not coming off that because TikTokers are mad. And so that's why he's saying that it's a generational gap, because like the older generations all support Israel. Like if you look at the polls, the older generation support Israel, the newer generation support Palestine. So they like, all right, we're going to have to just make up with it somewhere else. But it also means, though, that he's going to lose a lot less voters, you know, specifically older voters, and the ones that uniquely have a problem with Donald Trump, because he's hemorrhaging support, especially when you got Nikki Haley, who's dropped out the race but can still get 16% in Georgia. Mm-hmm. So, last question. Do you think it will actually be banned?
Do I think it'll actually be banned? I think it's possible.
You think it's possible?
I totally think it's in the realm of possibilities. I don't think that anybody has a Hail Mary move. I really don't know what Congress is going to do with it or how we are gauging the temperature of the pulse on their likelihood to pass it through. But it made it through one chamber. So I don't see why. I don't know why Joe Biden wouldn't go ahead and sign it, because I don't think he has the interest of the new generation or of the TikTok users or the... He's never made any gestures toward being soft toward that particular demographic. So I think he's going to do whatever the hell they tell him to do.
Yeah. Teamwork. So I don't think it's going to pass, because the Senate and the House have to operate differently. It's so many representatives in the House because they all represent their own district in multiple states. So you got multiple districts in multiple states. So these districts all, you know, they have their own ideological leaning, which means that as long as you in line with the community that you represent, the district that you represent, you good. You can get up there and say whatever the fuck you want to say. If that community, fuck the rest of the state, but if that district rock with you and they rock with what you're saying, you'll be reelected.
I mean, but I need to believe a lot of their districts don't rock with them. They just went up there. Them Democrats districts, I mean, like, because I feel like, what, Ilhan Omar, like, she's in the House, right? I'm not making it
she's
up.
In the House, yeah. She's
right,
in the House.
And she didn't vote for it. And her disposition toward it was largely because of the violations of the First Amendment. But there's hella other Democrats that don't give a shit about that shit that went ahead and did.
Well, but then if you look at, like, the Marjorie Taylor Greens, right? Like, the Jim Jordans of the world. These are people who have been wholly ineffective in legislating, but they keep getting reelected. See what I'm saying? Jim Jordan been in Congress 15 years. He's never passed a bill. Why is that? You know what I'm saying? And so the difference between the House and the Senate is the Senate has to represent the state. So you can't just go up there, you know what I'm saying? You can't just go up there saying whatever, because you have both the Democratic
Metropolitan and the Democratic, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Exactly. So that means when you got those metropolitan areas full of them Democrats and them rural areas full of them conservatives, you got to be able to get some of them moderates. You got to be able to get some of them those undecided voters, and you're not going to get them, and you're not going to get them standing up there just saying crazy wild shit. And so I think that it's imperative that the Senate actually care more about the constitutional questions, because it's more people that they reflect and represent than people in the House.
Real.
So I don't think it's going to pass the Senate.
We'll see for sure. Cause I don't know. I don't trust them niggas, man. What's good,
Yeah,
man? What's
we'll
good?
see.
What's good? What's good?
But with that being said, Toya, you can take us to our second chop to go ahead and close this. Well, not close it out, but take us to the second part of the conversation.
All right, real quick, let's go ahead and jump over. And we haven't been naming our chops lately, so I'm gonna call this an entertainment chop. Excuse me. We know that the Oscars passed this past weekend, and that there was a lot to be discussed, a lot to be seen. We're not gonna cut into a lot of it. Instead, I'm gonna get right at Mr. Cord Jefferson, who won the Oscar for Best Adapted Screenplay for the movie American Fiction. Now, I haven't been able to see American Fiction, but I definitely want to see it. And I have been hearing a lot of buzz around it. And the trailer itself is actually pretty interesting. We're not gonna play that because we got a couple other videos we're gonna play. But I will give you a synopsis of American Fiction if you're not familiar with it already. Main character Monk is a frustrated novelist who's fed up with the establishment that profits from Black entertainment that relies on tired and offensive tropes, stereotypes. To prove his point, he uses a pen name to write an outlandish book of his own, a book that propels him to the heart of hypocrisy and the madness he claims to disdain. So basically, man, Monk writes like about Black, and his one of the lines he has in the movies, and he's like, "I am a Black writer. I'm Black, and I'm a writer, right?" Like, just the very obvious connections means I write Black books, right? I create Black material because I'm a Black person writing it. It's Black,
Right.
but the industry doesn't see it that way, so he plays it up. Is every stereotypical kind of representation you can put in this book, gangsters and hoes and thugs and bitches and all this and all that and baby mamas and stuff. And the world goes crazy. His whole time, his true appearance or identity is hidden. And what he comes to find is exactly his biggest fear, basically, that they don't really want what he has to say. They are loving because he propels to all different levels of stardom. They want the whack shit. You know what I'm saying? They want the murky things. And so it really draws that out, does it in a I don't think it's a satirical way. It's more of just a humor kind of comedy way, but I
Yeah, like
think
it's a
it
straight comedy. Like it's just a
exactly.
straight
I'm trying to
comedy.
see how it's kind of characterized. At any rate, has a lot of big names in it, right? Jeffrey Wright is the star, but you also have Sterling K. Brown. You also have Erica Alexander, you know, from Living Single. Issa Rae is in it. Tracee Ellis Ross is in it. So a lot of big names. Just off the rip, and this question will be relevant as the conversation plays out, but just based on what I'm describing to you, does that movie sound interesting to you? Does that plot sound interesting to you? And chat, I want y'all to get in and talk to me too. Like, does that sound interesting? This Black writer who wants to be famous, who works very hard at his craft, who's all about his what he does in his profession, not getting the bump he wants, but as soon as he switches up and plays to the stereotype, he's propelled into the fame that he's always dreamed of, and he's conflicted about the things that, you know, what that means, and he explores that for a film. Would you watch a movie like that?
I'm
Does
gonna
that
be
stand out to
honest.
you as like a Black movie you would want to watch?
I'm gonna be honest. So I have a high threshold for like me in cinema. I'm not a movie guy, so like I have to really be engaged to sit and watch a movie. Unless it's like a superhero movie, and then I'm tapped in MCU.
All for it.
It doesn't though. It doesn't. Not because I think it's a bad movie or I think it's a bad premise or I think it's a bad concept. That's because it is a sobering reality. You know what I mean? That, yeah, we can laugh at it, but then the reality is still, you know what I'm saying? Like, 'cause like if I when I think about like what we do as podcasters, like we don't do relationship advice. Like we don't do religious debates. We don't do you know, Black men versus Black women. You feel me? Like we don't do the ratchet shit. Like we literally get up here and just kind of talk about things that we actually talk about. That we think is important, you feel me? And that we actually research to develop a better understanding of. And as much as we love doing that, that doesn't have the same appeal as being getting up here and be like, Black women need to learn that how they think about the world is the problem with how they think about, you know what I'm saying? Like that, like all of
For
that
the
type of shit.
reason,
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like that, like the whole Black men with mics shit, and all that type of shit. But even though as much as everybody's shitting on podcasts, as soon as a Cat Williams conversation come up talking about the Illuminati and men wearing dresses and all that other shit, Shannon Sharpe propels to stardom. I mean, he was already kind of up there, but Club Shay Shay now becomes a cultural phenomenon. You feel
And
me?
he's saying he made more from that interview than he made in the whole season of
Then
the
he
NFL is what
made
the word is.
in a whole season of the NFL. He gonna keep making money off of that interview. You feel me? Like, that's just the way the views work. You know what I'm saying? And so the reason why I wouldn't want to watch it is because, like that is the reality of, you know what I'm saying, so, like, some black intellectuals. You know what I mean? Like, if it doesn't, it has to have the type of entertainment value that appeals to the taste of the day in order for certain things to proliferate. And again, as good as that is as a concept for, like, a movie for us to understand and dissect and all of that, as somebody who experiences it, I'm cool on it.
And so, I mean, I have a follow-up question to that. So you want escapism. You don't want stories about real life. You don't want reflections of the experiences of the, and I'm using this language intentionally, the average black person. Like, that's not, like, those aren't stories that you want to see. You want to see fantasy. You want to see
otherworldly.
Like, what do you want?
Like, I think, like, Friday, right? Like, that's, sure. You know what I'm saying? Them the type of movies that, like, I can watch. You know what I'm saying? Just, like, the black experience being comedic. You know what I'm saying? Like, regardless of the circumstances, like, I can do that. But for me,
this is a comedy-esque movie. So, like, but it's not funny to you.
But it's also the comedy is set up for us to examine the social critique of,
right,
you know, like, black people being able to create things that other people say is black. You feel me? Or like tell black stories or talk about black shit. You feel me? So just from that perspective, like, I would prefer, like, cause I've always said I got enough drama in my real life. You know what I'm saying? Like, to sit and then kind of be entertained by that shit. Like I'm good. Now, I am a hood movie connoisseur.
I'm
gonna say that. I'm a hood movie connoisseur. You feel me?
Right.
So when it comes to black movies, but I don't think they don't make hood movies no more. You know what I'm saying?
Not really. I don't think there's an audience for it. So it made me, but this is at the same time where there's always a conversation about another Friday coming out and people seem to be interested in that. I don't know if you wouldn't really count Bad Boys as a hood movie, I don't think, because it's more like a blockbuster, like it was, you know, making money over summer and stuff like that.
It was a huge movie, yeah.
So I think that's a little bit, like, out of that range, but I mean, it may or may not be an audience for it. I want to go to the comments before you go to the clip of Cora Jefferson, who talks about his win, because I think his interview after the Oscars is really important. It leads me to kind of, setting up some other things. But as you pull that up and get that ready, and I couldn't hear the audio on the last clip, so double check that for me. But Atticus was good. Great to have you up in here. Van said, y'all push that like button. So definitely, if y'all been in here rocking with us, go ahead and hit that thumbs up real fast. You know, to make sure I love to be inspired to keep going, and y'all's love makes it real. So definitely go hit that thumbs up. Danielle said, like the movie, didn't read the book though. The movie was good. So we do have that take on it. And that's another endorsement for you to sit down and watch it for sure. KJ says, my gripe is even the real concepts are still going to need the approval of corporate owners who don't care about our best interests in order to be properly marketed. And I think that's the, you know, a really big concern is the level of filtration and the level of distilledness that a lot of our stories get. So when we get these stories, and I'm going to list a couple and talk about a couple other movies, even one that's dropping next weekend, I do wonder about the CEOification of it all. Like, you have these dynamic ideas, but, you know, black filmmakers are all over the place. Filmmakers of many intersectionalities are telling a lot of different stories. And when it all comes down to it, there's got to be things about these stories that cut the mustard in front of white people in order to make it to our big screens. And so KJ makes a point that, you know, there's always a chance it gets watered down. Let's listen to Cora Jefferson real quick reflect on the significance of him winning this award for this film.
And to be clear, the Oscar that he won was for Best Adapted Screenplay.
Yeah.
Best Adapted Screenplay. Okay. My fault. I ain't.
You got it.
Let's get it.
Hello, Elle Marie with EUR Web.
Hi.
Hi, Cora. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I feel like you kind of foreshadowed your success with the character Adam Brody's Get Your Tux Ready, We're Going to the Big Show. And so here we are. So I want you to speak to the importance of being recognized for a film that shined a light on the stereotypes and also kind of poked fun of the stereotypes of black characters in film.
Yeah. There's a Victor Hugo quote that he says, nothing is more powerful than an idea whose time has come. And so
that's a dope quote,
you know,
too.
I was very passionate about this film. Everybody who worked on this film was very passionate about it. Nobody was there for the money because we didn't have any money. So people were there because they believed in it. And so to be here now and to receive this kind of response is it feels incredibly surreal. I'm so grateful for it. I think everybody on the film is so grateful for it. We didn't have a huge marketing budget, and so we relied on word of mouth a lot, and people who liked the film telling other people that they liked the film. And so, it is, you know, hopefully the lesson here, and it's kind of what I tried to convey in my speech, is that there is an audience for things that are different. There is an appetite for things that are different, and, you know, a story with black characters that's going to appeal to a lot of people doesn't need to take place on a plantation, doesn't need to take place in the projects, doesn't need to have drug dealers in it, doesn't need to have gang members in it, that there's an audience for different depictions of people's lives, and that there is a market
somebody trying
for
to clap.
Depictions of black life that are as broad and as deep as any other depictions of people's lives. Does that make sense? Thank you.
All okay. Right.
Yeah, go ahead.
Now that clip to me completely kind of is responsive to what you were just describing, right? About, I mean, your taste specifically, but also what, you know, Court is trying to bring to the industry and bring to the table. I feel like in the same vein of your Get Outs, your Blackenings, right? Which is, you know, you got Get Out and it's straight up horror and all the things that Jordan Peele created. But after that, you have the Blackening, which is like black comedy horror, so different storytelling, different approaches to, you know, that's not a sequel. I really love that. And with the whole Oscar So White campaign, with the whole, I feel like that's what the demands was. After Django, people was like, we sick of looking at these grotesque, gratuitous symbols of us being beat in fields and blood splatter everywhere and this and that. 2 years of Slave?
12 years.
12 years, Lord Jesus, I cut a decade off. Just 12 years of Slave, my Lord Jesus. 2 is enough. A day is probably enough.
Well, real quick, but where would you put They Clone Tyrone?
In the same list of new and innovative approaches to storytelling. I mean, I think the nature of black existences is always going to have a little social commentary. I mean, Friday has social commentary in it, my nigga. Like, there are things to be said about Ezell. There are things to be said about Felicia. There are things to be said about Smokey. There are things to be said about Craig.
Miss
like,
Parker.
They're like, conversation is endless, right? There are a lot of things that can be broken down. And so I just don't think we have the privilege or the benefit of seeing even ourselves in anything that is not fantasy based or whatever without having the backdrop of that. Because like, what time period was that? And where's the setting at? And what part of the United States or another? Like, those are always going to be things in the back of my mind. When I think about really cool white people and I learn history lessons about white people, I'm always like, I wonder if they was nice to niggas. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's no information given to me that is situated in this real world that's not like some alternative universe where I don't have that ensemble of questions in the back of my mind, right? So I say this to say, I feel like once upon a time, everybody was like, we want other stories. We want alternative approaches. We want new and innovative approaches like this that don't rely on the gangster paradigm. Niggas ain't gotta shoot and get killed, whatever, whatever.
Slang
but
dope.
There are people... Yeah, but pull up the tweet because there are people who, you know, for all intents and purposes, are upset with what Court said, right? So there's a tweet from True Laurels that the plug is about to pull up, and I'm going to give him a chance to pull it up because it's actually a 3-part tweet, and I'm going to read it because I want to know from you and I want to know from the people in the comments if this tweet has a point. Right. I thought we was all on the same page about wanting to see these diverse images, wanting to see new forms of storytelling, wanting to get it a little bit different. But True Laurel says, I love when black people subconsciously express their disdain for other types of black people. And the vitriol is typically pointed toward ones who are the most actively oppressed in our society. He continues by saying, or they continue by saying, this fake plight of the middle/upper class American Negro is so tired And it's not even accurate for real. The vast majority of niggas I see getting life-sustaining opportunities are ones who came up incredibly privileged and surrounding themselves with non-Blacks or Blacks just like them. He concludes by saying, or they conclude by saying, that was pretty much my whole issue with American Fiction. I'm not going to act like I didn't like parts of it, but it was so dishonest in its critique. The niggas getting seven-figure book deals ain't the ones coming out the projects. It's the ones who rub shoulders with whites on a regular basis. And so, and then I'll read you the first comment that I really kind of agree with. They say, you missed the point. To me, he subconsciously is your projected false interpretation of his statement. All he's saying is, to me, that there are multiple universes in the Black community and Hollywood needs to stop glorifying slavery and et cetera and highlight others that exist. What is your take, Plug, on this conversation? On one side, different diverse stories, approaches, and ways of Black storytelling that are specifically Black and not ambiguous about that, but aren't steeped in, you know, these tropes and these narratives. Or y'all not the only niggas who is hurting out here. We need our stories told. Those stories are still important. And you are trying to middle class / oppression Olympics your way into the spotlight because you feel like don't nobody tell your stories. How do you feel?
So I feel like we need more stories of Black people. Like, we need multifaceted stories of Black people. We need Black fantasy. We need Black wizards. We need Black spacemen. You know what I'm saying? Like, we just need depictions of Black people across the swath of media that we see everybody else in. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
But where I think the problem lies, though, and like where like things are missed is that we have to understand, though, that the attempt to distance oneself from the hood is typically saturated with anti-Blackness. So it's like I get what Corey Jefferson is saying when he's like, all of our images don't have to reflect the hood. All of our images don't have to reflect slavery. Our stories don't have to reflect that. I think that's more of a criticism of Hollywood than it is of Black people, though. And I think that's what dude missed. Because right now, there's a viral situation on TikTok where it started out as just, as a Black person, I'm no longer afraid to say X, right? And once somebody, of course, this is inevitable, but somebody was like, as a Black person, I'm no longer afraid to say that I don't like people in the hood. I don't like being around people from the hood, from the ghetto. And that's what he's responded to, is the ways that people who grew up outside of the hood, the people who grew up in the suburbs or grew up in places where opportunity was prevalent, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those people then create a perception of the hood, of the ghetto, and people that come from that place that's pretty much informed by the anti-Blackness that they learn from being in a more privileged scenario. You know what I mean? And so while I can appreciate True Laurel's his vigor to defend people who come from more impoverished areas that lack opportunity, I also think that they missed the point on what he was saying, because Hollywood invests in the same story. Hollywood right. invests in slave movies. Hollywood invests in crime stories, in drug dealing stories, in, you know what I'm saying, gangster stories type shit.
In the same way the music industry, you know what I'm saying? You wonder why, you know, what rises to the top or what we end up hearing the most or what we end up seeing the most, the murder, kill, kill. That's what sells. That's what these industries are putting money behind. That's what they give in. You know, forward and cash for these artists to really figure out what they want to do to be available to them to push a brand and push a product 24/7. Leave your family, leave your little forward you this cash. We'll give you a cash advance as long as you make this type of music. I mean, and I feel like I forget which artists, you know, we pointed at that said this, that pointed out the fact that they don't want that. This is what they pay us for, so this is what we make.
Meek, which,
you know, interestingly enough, is in conversation for a whole bunch of crazy reasons, but. You know, he was on to something at all. But I tell you what, he was on to something when he said that. And so the whole scapegoat of, you know, that a lot of hip hop artists use, a lot of rappers use, is we storytellers, you know, we just, and they telling us stories that's not even their truth. You know what I'm saying? That's the other side, is even their stories and recollections are being embellished. So when we look at the projects coming out of Hollywood, what studios are paying for are not even the real versions of it. You know what I'm saying? It's the tricked up, hyped up version of, you know, the worst possible scenario and the worst possible situations that come out of the hood. And so it's what they willing to fund. You know what I mean? And so I think that's what becomes a complicated question when we know and we see the agenda right there. How do we celebrate? I won't say how do we celebrate, but there is just a complication in celebrating even some of those narratives that are negative. Because we want Black people to make it. We want them to reach the upper echelons. We want them to get those those gold trophies and those gold statues. We want them in those rooms making those strides. But when we know what they cranking out for the sake of what the industry wants to see, do we stop and ask the question long enough? Like, are you culpable in these representations and their negative influences on our communities? But those are complex questions when you're just trying to celebrate niggas winning things and being happy that niggas is finally in the room and that they finally getting statues that have been denied. It's all complicated.
But are we supposed to be happy about that though? Like, cause it's like when we boycott the Grammys, when we boycott the Oscars, we're supposed to be letting them know that the standards that they operate from we no longer care about that. Like, that's no longer. So it's like when they give it to us, it's like, okay, yeah, cool. But then if we boycotting them because we don't like how they move, and then they be like, okay, well, we'll give you for, because American Fiction is the, if we being honest, it's the type of movie that would win an Oscar. I think he probably wrote that knowing if this get picked up, it's up. Why?
Yeah.
Because you have a protagonist who isn't overly Black, which isn't it. When I say overly Black, overly stereotypically Black, right?
Right.
But. That's an issue for him because he's a Black writer and he doesn't want to be put into any box because he feels like his Blackness is just as valid as any Blackness that you can find in the hood, which is true, right? And
absolutely.
And this is the middle class appeal that we see. You feel me? The woe is me because, you know, yeah, I can't help it that I came from a more privileged situation. I shouldn't be oppressed by other Black people because of that. And it's like, it's people that want that to be the case. There's people that want that thing to be true. And as frustrating as it is for like the main character of this book to be in that situation, they have to understand that that's still just the reality, not a question of Blackness, but the reality of being Black in white spaces, period. They want you how they want you. You feel me? Because sometimes these things can turn into criticisms of Black people because it's like, well, this is what Black people consume. That Black people consume a wide range of shit. And sometimes, like, you know, the life of a suburban housewife ain't gonna appeal, that, like a movie about that, or, even though she's a Black woman, ain't going to appeal to sisters in the hood who just like, that ain't even reality.
I'm learning about that, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, well, like, yeah, go ahead.
Well, no, go ahead. Finish your thought.
Well, I was just saying, so it's like the it's even though this is kind of like a different story, it's not though, because it's more of it's a part of a plight that people are trying to create. You know what I'm saying? So that the ghetto shaming and the hood shaming are like, so that can proliferate right now. It's like reverse racism against other Black people. It's like, oh my God. Because I'm not from the hood, I can't, you know what I'm saying? And people lose sight of the fact that people from the hood, the way that they view things, because this is their reality, it's not a lot of y'all in the suburbs. So if we see all Black people in this scenario, of course, Black people grow up, like Black kids grow up thinking like, yeah, this is what Black look like. Because then you go to the suburbs and you see raisins in a rice bowl, you're not gonna think like, this environment. I mean, yes, niggas here, but is this a Black environment? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm gonna go to the comments. I think some interesting things are being said here. Donnell says it was centered around a Black man who, although an intellectual, still struggles with feelings of inadequacy, imposter syndrome, sibling strife, and the overall gaze Black people go through daily. So using that as kind of a fulcrum for what to expect then does, you know, allow for there to be some intrigue to me, right? I do want to see Black people tell those stories about how they deal with things that are not necessarily about their socioeconomic status or trying to navigate, you know, the struggles of survivor's remorse because they went in advance but had to leave some things behind. It's just about, I mean, this might have some of it in there, but the notions of, you know, not feeling like you belong in a space, sibling strife. And I mean, let's be honest, we went to PWIs, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's more related. I won't say it's more relatable than a lot of other, you know, more stereotypical stories. I feel like we got a finger in a toe and a little bit of everything, but that's some shit I identify with. Like, I would probably see myself in a film like that, which is why it's interesting to me specifically. Shout out to Blue for being in the building. Say what's up to both of us.
My boy Blue, what's good with you?
Dropped a couple comments. The best black approaches have been on television series, but they keep cutting them shorter, undermining them outside of Atlanta. That's facts. Watchmen, Lovecraft Country, and American Gods were all dope.
I was going to say Lovecraft Country for sure.
The one that I think is the people's favorite is Lovecraft Country, one that a lot of people talked about, you know, not really getting a chance to appreciate. Continue, Vance said, they cloned Tyrone was also a great flick that touched on the hood from a sci-fi perspective. And I thought that was nice, right? A very mixed medium approach to telling and introducing stories. Still had the backdrop of social criticism and kind of, you know, for everything from the chicken to, you know, when they got underground and was in the laboratory and stuff like that. A lot of things that have us looking at, you know, black people's positionalities and subjectivities specifically, but in an interesting way told that story. KJ says, let me see. Man says, ultimately what we need is for the BET, the NAACP, and Soul Train Awards to also expand how they present and award blackness too. That's facts. Cornerstone black institutions, I feel like, do a very poor job at innovating and at making themselves credible to new generations and really making themselves interesting to new generations and relevant. Yeah, very much so. And I think that's a problem. I feel like the NAACP has worked to kind of come around the corner and challenge some of those things. But I feel like it ain't no nothing.
I don't think the NAACP can, because that's another organization controlled by, I'll leave it there.
And so, real quick, because I feel like we've been talking for a bit. We 70 minutes in. I want to go ahead and start to point us. So, I guess... regardless of how you feel about these representations, right? Regardless of how you want yours, whether you want it straight, nitty-gritty hood, you know, no escapism, just real life black people, bottom rungs of society, whether you want, you know, this kind of middle class, whatever you want to approach that is real life from the position of people who are not necessarily talking from the struggle. There's no slavery narrative. It's just black people living life and having real life experiences that everybody else will have just from a black lens or with black characters. Right. Doing those things, right? I want to go be a lawyer and get into law school and face some challenges, not necessarily related to my race, and do some cool shit. And you know what I'm saying? Like, just like anybody else would.
Like a black, so you legally have blonde.
And then we have our escapisms, right? Our horror films, like a black legally blonde, for sure. or like Barbie, you know what I'm saying? Like spinoffs from Barbie that really kind of, but black Barbie was a thing. So I don't know. Let's not get away. Let's not lose the plot here.
Yeah.
But I think what we're getting at is that there's room for all of our black stories and that everybody is trying to get us to recognize that our representation is important, that it has value, that our stories have value in the marketplace of ideas and in the marketplace of art. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So we agree, regardless of what you like, what your flavor is, we all kind of agree that these black stories have value in them being told. There is a movie.
Okay, go ahead. Continue.
No, you, please. If I'm wrong, please tell me that I'm wrong. Because I feel like you were saying, I don't mind black stories and representations. I just want my shit to be ones that allow for me to get away from the realities of black subjectivity, of gratuitous anti-black violence, of white supremacy. I don't really want those stories. I want a black Harry Potter, in so many words. Yes, that's true.
But actually, what you're about to get into is the point that I was gonna make. So like we could just
we'll get there.
And so
I feel like in this move to just make sure that we are producing black things for black people, by black people with black perspective, I don't want us to lose the plot, because I'm not here, you know, like it's kind of like I'm rooting for everybody black, and I am most of the time, but I do be having questions. And whereas I don't really have big questions about American fiction, I think there's some, I've explained why I feel like there's some value there. There's a movie coming out on March 22nd, so next weekend, called The American Society of Magical Negroes. And it addresses, first of all, just with the title, it kind of addresses it in the trailer in terms of me being like, are we sure we want to call it that? But that's clearly a high point that they have in the movie, because I don't know if I want people talking about, what are you doing this weekend? Or I watch The American Society of Magical Negroes. I don't know if I want that to be, but they don't care. But and so I don't know. But I just want us to watch this trailer and then talk about it, because it's projects like this that had me putting question marks toward these new approaches to not telling these stereotypical traditional stories and doing something different. By the way, before you play it, I want to give a synopsis of the story. The American Society of Magical Negroes is a fresh satirical comedy inspired by the magical Negro cinematic trope popularized in American cinema and television throughout the 20th century and first named and criticized by filmmaker Spike Lee. Flipping the trope on his head, the American Society of Magical Negroes follows a young man, Aaron, who is recruited into a secret society of magical Black people, listen to this, who dedicate their lives to the cause of utmost importance, making white people more comfortable. Although initially enamored with his new powers, Aaron begins to question the value of using supernatural means to do the very thing he's felt obligated to do his whole life. I both do and don't understand what that combination of words means in terms of a plot. And to me, the trailer didn't really help. Let's watch it together and then we'll talk about it toward the end.
All right, let's go.
Welcome to the American Society of Magical Negroes.
I know you can feel their discomfort, Aaron. Watching you walk through a room full of white people was the most painful thing I've ever seen.
Excuse me. Sorry.
And I want to take you to a job interview.
There's a recruiting class starting right now, and we got to get you in it.
Welcome to the American Society of Magical Negroes.
I don't really understand.
It's easier to say.
What's the most dangerous animal on the planet?
Shark.
White people, when they feel uncomfortable. White people feeling uncomfortable precedes a lot of bad stuff for us. That's why we fight white discomfort every day. Because the happier they are, the safer we are.
The name needs a little updating, maybe like magical Black people, or I guess that doesn't have the same ring.
You ready?
Oh, wow.
Your first client is a Jason Munt. His morale is far too low.
Hey.
Hey.
Darn it. I was hoping there was a station right next to him.
Oh, is this one spoken for?
No.
Yeah, it's actually fun and weirdly relaxing. It's like being a secret agent with none of the danger.
Hey, I'm Lizzie.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
She's great.
Yeah, she's cool.
You kidding? Come on, man. She's smart and funny. And...
I know what you were doing going on about her. You're trying to set us up.
No. That's not what I was doing.
You cannot have a relationship with Lizzie now. Because if you don't put Jason first, everyone's magic will fail.
I've always felt like it's my job to make white people feel comfortable. And here it literally is. But maybe it shouldn't be.
I got a great plan to ask her out, but I'm gonna need your help.
Do you think you could, like, work your magic?
Hey, is he talking about me?
Hey.
Oh my, wait, are you? But I've traveled a long way.
Someone defied the society. Who was it?
You didn't let her go like I told you. If you interfere with her or your client, you could have your memory erased. You won't even remember she existed.
Even though we might never see each other again, I need you to know that what we had was real.
I'm curious to see how you're gonna make it out of all this.
All right, y'all.
So you see why I wanted to watch that with you. First impressions. And by the way, this stars Justice Hill. This is David Alan Greer, Nicole Byer, Aisha Hines, who is my girl from 911. A lot of heavy hitters in this one too. First reaction.
Yeah, I'm not fucking with it. I'm cool.
Can I ask you why?
Yeah, because it's, first of all, okay, we work to make white people feel comfortable so they're not more dangerous, et cetera, even though that premise is, like, faulty as hell because comfortable white people is when they're the most dangerous. You know what I mean? Like, I would heavily push back against that. Like, once white people get comfortable, they also become more comfortable with their racism. It's not like they start being more altruistic to Black people or change their niceness has never changed whether or not a white person was going to treat niggas like shit. Because what happens is, and I think this is the part that they kind of, I don't know how they address it, but the problem with the magical Negro is that they're set apart. from other mm-hmm. black people. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like it's like, yeah, it's this black person that I like. You're a black person. You're not a nigger, Jamal. Like it's that's all that's happening. And I think that like, and then, I mean, listen, love who you love. I ain't got no problem being around that. But then when like a large plot of the movie is this nigga competing with this white man for a white woman. What are we doing? Like what are we doing?
You know, I feel like I've specifically seen in the request for the diversity of films for there to be more rom-coms, like black love rom-coms specifically. Like we haven't had the Best Man or a The Wood or a Love and Basketball. There hasn't been a black love story that's kind of been centered for us to invest in and really Hitch. Hitch wasn't even a black love story. I feel like
was it The Photo or The Photograph? It was a movie with Issa Rae and Lakeith Stanfield.
You're right. And so, but not enough, right? And you see, I have a laundry list. We love jump. Like there are so many movies we can look back from the 90s and the 2000s. To really demonstrate what I'm talking about, but we don't have many of those. And then when you do kind of give us some of that angle, this is not hate against interracial relationships because they're as real as anything, but that doesn't seem to be so I guess my question, what the people ask for. And so my question is like, who's the audience for this movie? Is it white people? Because like there was when I think about it, I think about, what would Dear White People? And kind of, I guess, the appeal that it was supposed to have to them as well as me. But I don't see black people being the audience for this. When I look to the comments, Emmanuel say this look like some bullshit. I'm cool with the laughing emojis. Let's see. Anybody else? Miss Ma'am says, okay, now I better understand the concept of the movie. It's a pass for me, especially if it's supposed to push choose your happiness over their comfort. A non-black love interest misses that point. My God. A word. I'll say it again. It's a pass for me, especially if it's supposed to push choose your happiness over their comfort. A non-black love interest misses that point. And I think when we talk about, but I mean, it depends on whose happiness you're talking about and trying to preserve. Go ahead.
And it's like, and it's the obligation to this white man too. Like, and it's this black man telling him to be obligated to this white man. And it's like the movie, even if the movie is supposed to criticize the society for like criticize how they operate, kind of like some Black Panther Open Up Wakanda type shit, like criticizing the structure and all of that. Even if it is, this is that light skin suburban story. And no offense to light skin people, which I know what I mean. We know what we mean culturally when we say light skin, but it's American. It's like American Fiction. It is the oh my God, the struggle of us black people who are accepted into whiteness. Like, oh my God, the struggle of us black people who work so hard to make sure white people are comfortable. Stop it. That is a story. When you ask who wants to hear that story, this is a white people story or a suburban nigga story. A nigga who got clowned for his hairline, you know what I'm saying? But grew up and got a good ass job. You feel me? Went to college, did his shit. You feel me? And now he has access
to white spaces, whether it be from magic or some other.
And he has this slight black resentment because it's like he wasn't the black person that fit in like other black people, like kind of like how we felt in the hood. Goddamn it. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I'm saying? The nigga, like we niggas on the debate team, in the middle, smack dab in the middle of the ghetto. You feel me? We was not niggas, like we wasn't niggas that fit in like that. But it's like we still respect the hood in our family because it's a part of who we are, even if we didn't fit in that shit. So like these stories that attempt to create this plight of, you know what I'm saying, like black suburban nature.
Yeah.
You feel me? Like, oh my God, the struggle. Like, yeah, I got this white boy that's my best friend, but it's this white girl who, you know what I'm saying, that like I really got a crush on. That is for suburban niggas, period. Like, and they're black people, nigga, like suburban niggas. Y'all are black. Like, this is a black story. American Fiction is a black story, but but when niggas from the hood are looking at that as like a plight, you feel me? Then that's when it's like, all right, I guess I'm not going, I'm not gonna like have beef with that, but that's just something like that's for y'all. Like that's specific.
So yeah, I mean, I think that's the conclusion we have to have. I mean, I think my personal opinion is that I agree with Cora Jefferson's original opinion, which is that there should be a place and a landscape, a cornucopia, a diaspora. And I see our Chop Nation in the comments talking about the black diaspora. I haven't been able to read those particular comments fast enough, so I kind of been just kind of weaving through those because I can't really put the whole conversation together right now. But, you know, I feel like we need all of those stories. I feel like, you know, if we could get more money behind them, but we also have to recognize those stories exist. There's a lot of black platforms. I think All Black, and it might be All BLK, is a platform that's like for $5.99, gives you access to a lot of quality black writing. I was kind of
better than Tubi.
That's better than Tubi. I we had to put a close to this. And so shout out to, I ain't gonna get no shout outs because I had to dead it. But I was dating this young lady and kind of dealing with her. She was and I mean, as recently as yesterday, I was like, I think I'm good. But she's in the USC School of Film and TV Writing. And so she has written a full episode on a show with like people I recognize. Like she did a premiere of a film, a 30-minute short about a month ago. It was phenomenal. Saw the picture, saw the video. It was an auspicious occasion where a lot of people were there to support. So it's a lot of black people making stuff. Go watch it. Go find it. You know what I'm saying? Because these stories from the diaspora being told, you know what I'm saying, like very interestingly and without or with a lot of the intersections that I think make us amazing. They might not always make it to the big screen. They might not always make it to our apps, but they absolutely do exist. And I think it's our responsibility as consumers of this media to go find it.
So I was able to get the context with KJ and Vance about the diaspora and all of that, because KJ was pointing out how, let me find the comment. I don't think we need black versions of white concepts. Plenty of concepts we can use from an African, Caribbean, black in general foundation. Vance's point was that a lot of those concepts that black people think are white were actually originated by black people though. So, but then KJ, he kind of clarified when he said, black stories, Ben had magic. We don't need a black Harry Potter, for instance, is all I'm saying. Right. And I understand that. But when I'm saying black Harry Potter, I'm saying, I'm speaking more to like the tropes in Harry Potter with black people. So a institution of magic, like what the school, whatever magical Negroes could have been. You feel me? I think this is an example of over politicizing black shit. Like as opposed to just having the story of a young black witch. You feel me? Who shit, like, you know, like foster home, whatever. Because, like, these stories, oh, really? It's not that they white or black. It's who are we giving the face to? Who are we
making? I mean, I think I would be really interested in a meaningful project from black people, by black people, about voodoo and hoodoo. Something that demystifies that and really is honest about its origins, what it is, everything from its African roots to, you know what I'm saying, like, the Americanization, the American influence of it, you know what I'm saying, on slaves and stuff like that. Like, I think that would be an amazing project to take in. But Jay Universe said, I don't want to skip this comment. Not a black man fighting for a white woman. It's a hard no for me. So I just wanted to make sure that vote was tallied in our conversation of who's even trying to look out for this particular film. Remember I said it comes out next weekend. I low-key want to watch it. It's something that just looking at it, I'm side-eyeing it, but I want to watch it just to see if the ending is something that I don't suspect. Because, you know, like these days, trailers, and that was a two-minute trailer. So I'm trying to figure out if it was 2 minutes of them telling me the movie, which is what they tend to do these days with these new trailers that they come out with, or if it's 2 minutes of some shit that I'm thinking, but then it's going to end up being something that I'm not, and the right thing is going to prevail, and we're going to end up on the right path. And so if we'll see if it crosses my way. And whether, is that my little friend tapping at the door?
Yeah.
Our executive producer? I'm done. So you can definitely tell the EP to come on in. It's been a great conversation. Hey. I feel like we talked about this potential TikTok and social media ban. We should be concerned about it. Like I told y'all, like I've been seeing, it's not just a TikTok or a TikTok ban. It is a very muchly a freedom of expression ban, a potential ban on our ability to speak and have free speech and represent ourselves. Our producer is here. Hello, Huey. Hey. Tell my nephew. I said, what's good?
Hi.
Hey, what's good? I like those PJs. But we also got into the movies that's dropping. We got into American Fiction. And we had a great conversation. So if y'all got here late, start at the top. If y'all been here the whole time and you didn't hit the thumb, make sure you do that. If you love us for real, share the video. Tell people you got a cool little pod you want them to get into, you want them to tap in with. Jay Universe told Job about it. Y'all need to be like Jay. You know what I'm saying? Like, I really am appreciating the
Top Boosie. Nation number y'all. One support. Well, I got to say, because it's a lot of y'all that's our number one supporter. So we rock with all y'all.
And support us in different ways. Some of y'all blow up the YouTube. Some of y'all meet us over on the IG at the Chop Up Show. Some of y'all just listen. And shout out to our people in Spotify land and Apple Pods land who listen to it on a variety of platforms out there. We feel y'all. Y'all's love is real. Y'all be running up the numbers. We keep it cranked out for y'all. So we get love from so many different places. If y'all are listening, do me a favor. If y'all are listening on Apple Pods, go leave us a comment. Go run them up real quick. Go leave us some stars, some lights, rate. Leave some comments over there. 2024. I ain't seen no new comments since 23. So if y'all like the show, it's a new year. Go tell us about it over there on Apple Pods so that the people, including us, can see that y'all rocking with the show because we don't never get to hear from y'all. You know what I'm saying? Like, and that would mean a lot to me.
And if y'all want to get Chop Up material while you scrolling through your Facebook or through your TikTok while we still got it, follow me at The Political Plug. If y'all want to see more Toya face on TikTok, follow me at The Political Plug. That's where our Chop Up content goes. We're trying to get it up to 40K. So y'all support mean a lot. So with that being said, man, thank y'all for this wonderful dialogue. Thank everybody that was commenting, kicking it with us in the chat. Tomorrow we get the Fonnie Willis decision. So it's a good
chance. Y'all been rocking with the plug on that. So y'all make sure y'all jump in on YouTube like y'all been doing and clock in for duty.
I was about to say, it's a good chance that we're going to be live in the morning, okay? We're going to be live in the morning. So we may only have a short break before we back at it. But again, thank y'all for joining us tonight. This is The Chop Up. We will see y'all next time. Peace.
Love y'all. Good night. Peace.